I want to begin with a song. This is actually a song I learned 30 years ago. I learned from the person who wrote it, a woman by the name of Bimsy Kirkpatrick. She's a Quaker in the Midwest. And I only this week discovered that it made it into the most recent Friends or Quakers hymnal, which those of you who know anything about Quakers, that might be an oxymoron. Friends hymnal. Because Quaker worship in its strictest form is what? Silence. Okay. Anyway, you'll find it on your insert, and it's good no matter what speed you take it, because some of us walk fast, some walk slow, and the chorus is the one I remember as I am walking. But it goes like this. I am no prophet, I am no sage. Don't yet know what is on the next page. Can't see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. One step at a time, one step at a time. Each one covered with glory and grime. Can't see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. It's just to the chorus. One step at a time, one step at a time. Each one covered with glory and grime. Can't see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. Imagine yourself walking. Sometimes I'm scared when I don't know the way. Want to turn back when the skies are all gray. Can't comprehend any reason or why. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. One step at a time, one step at a time. Each one covered with glory and pride. Can't see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. Last verse. Help me to learn how to lighten the load. Teach me to see all the flowers in the road. Stars in the sky and the windmills that chime. Lord, teach me the joys of one step at a time. One step at a time, one step at a time. Each one covered in glory and grime. Can see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me. At a time, one step at a time, each one covered with glory and grime. Can't see the mountaintop as I climb. So Lord, please show me one step at a time. What do you expect? This is the second in the series of four sermons that are following the sermon of Jesus, we sometimes call the Sermon on the Plain. Those of you who were here last week made the connection as I shared with Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, which we sometimes call the Sermon on the Mount, kind of the core of Jesus' teaching. Well, Luke kind of puts that just into one chapter and only a portion of that chapter. And this morning, kind of the second part of that. What do you expect? What on earth does a song like this have to do with what we just read? Well, I don't know about you, but as I hear those words from Jesus as remembered by Luke, those are hard, terribly hard words. Turning the other cheek, doing good to those who wish you ill, lending without expectations. When we were in Nigeria in March, we spent an afternoon with the faculty, brethren faculty and students at the Theological College of Northern Nigeria. And we shared there, and as I may have said in when I spoke in the fellowship hall about that trip,
that one was one of the times when I didn't get as much out of it. And I think part of it was due to the fact that we weren't gathered in a circle or in some way kind of equally around a common center. One of the curses, if you will, of a sanctuary is that it does not give as much chance for give and take that a circle does, because you've got everybody over here all faced in one direction, and you've got somebody up here like me facing in this direction, and it's not as necessarily as conducive to discussion. And that was the case. What we had in that sanctuary there at TCNN was the faculty sitting over here, and the students sitting over here, and us Americans who had come to listen sitting up here. And the language is thin. The things that were shared were a little bit stilted. Now, maybe it also sounded a little bit ivory tower. They were thinking theoretically and stuff like this. And add to that the dimension that, as was shared by a few, that the brethren, the EYN in Nigeria, are known by other Christians as the turn the other cheek Christians, almost sometimes with derision. You know, in thinking about conflicts with Muslims and stuff like this, they ask, well, what do you turn the other cheek people think? Almost not expecting to get much of a deep answer. And what I heard was some, especially from some of the faculty, was that they were really struggling with that, because they wanted to be theologically adept. And sometimes it seemed like they were backing a little bit away from their roots, especially the faculty. I didn't hear that as much in the students, but then the students, when they finally shared, most of their concerns were for things like, well, is there going to be a job for me when I graduate? How am I going to make it through this year? You know, the thoughts of students all over. In fact, I remember one of the teachers standing up and sharing about how he was ministering in a particular congregation, and I don't remember if this was a brethren congregation, EYN, they go by acronyms a lot over there, or whether it was an ECWA, or Evangelical Church of West Africa congregation, which has some, you know, they're one of the churches that have some somewhat similarities to the brethren over there. But anyways, the church was thinking about what they could do to prepare just in case some radical Muslims came to burn down the church. And somebody suggested as they were gathered to make some decisions about, well, maybe we should take up an offering and buy some weapons that we could use. And fortunately, there was a dear sister, and it often is a dear sister, who raised questions about that. Is that what we should be doing? And they said, well, you know, you're right. Maybe we shouldn't. But then they finally decided upon, okay, not weapons, but maybe rocks. We can get a pile of rocks. And then we'll have those rocks there so that if somebody, you know, if they come, we can pick up a rock and be ready. And I didn't say at the time, because our goal in going there was not to preach, but to listen. But I wanted to ask, okay, so the time comes and your enemies or who intend you ill come and you gather at the church and you pick up a rock. It seems like at that point you've got one of two options. Either A, you throw that rock, or B, you don't. To me, that, you know, that's either you use the weapon or you don't use the weapon. And what I wanted to say, but we were, again, we were there not, you know, I'm any one to share, you know, to be telling them what they should be doing in their setting, because I'm only just walking there for a few days. You know, who am I to tell them what they should be doing? But from my perspective, this whole bit of you know, turning the other cheek that Jesus said, or going the second mile, or, you know, the many different ways in which he put it, is my perspective is that him saying that was intended to open up the imagination to alternatives, possibilities you may not think of. Not that, okay, every time that a person comes up to you, you know, and they strike your cheek, well, this is the only thing you can do. Because they were saying, we've been, you know, our cheek's been slapped so many times, and, you know, nobody likes this. But what are other possibilities? What other alternatives are there? What do you expect? You know, when I hear these words of Jesus, I make a shift in my head. I don't know if you do. I make a shift in expectations. Because I think we can approach these words of Jesus as you might approach a recipe. That if only you put in this ingredient, or if only you do this, then this will happen. And I think many people who are pacifists, if you will, kind of operate out of that mode. I mean, if you turn the other cheek, then, well, that person, you know, will be suddenly shifted from an enemy to a friend, because they'll look at that other cheek turned and they won't strike it. Or if we just do this, then this will happen. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it is at all. It's a matter of expectation. I mean, sometimes you can expect if you turn the other cheek, that other one will get slapped. But what are you expecting? What are you expecting? Now, I did hear another story from Nigeria, and it came out of the Catholic Church. And I'm not sure how true across the board during the most recent riots this was, but many of the Catholic churches, they didn't get burned. You want to know why? Because when the message was passed that there was riots on the way or something happening, the youth of the church, especially the young men, all went to the church. And they just surrounded it, the church building. They stood and surrounded it. Didn't have rocks in their hands, didn't have weapons in their hands, but they just surrounded the church and stood there. But again, that's not an if-then recipe. You know, if you do this, then your church won't get burned. No. But you know, as I think about recipes, and to be honest, now I'm having to pay more attention to recipes. I'm doing a little bit more cooking. And I'm at this stage paying more attention to the recipes, you know. Those of you who cook a lot, you know, you don't look at, you know, these recipes say 1 cup. And so I said, 1 cup. And 1 teaspoon. Exact. It's got to be exact. And those of you who cook a lot, that's just kind of about that. And about that. A pinch of this, you know, pinch. That's a real exact measurement, isn't it? A pinch. Or what are some of the other terms that you... A little bit of this, a little bit of that. And if I understand rightly, oftentimes different meals came into existence because, well, may have forgotten a particular item or added another item or was a little bit more of this or a little bit of less of that, and it becomes something new. Right? Is that how things come into existence when it comes to food? So recipes are not always exact things. If you do this, then this will happen. Creative. Alternatives. Possibilities. A lot depends, though, upon what you expect. I mean, if you were expecting, if I'm expecting when I am making something that it's going to turn out, you know, just the greatest thing since the invention of the knife that cuts the bread, since sliced bread, then I've got another thing coming. But being open to possibilities that do come our way. It's interesting. In that passage, I don't know if you were listening, but okay. In there it says, where Jesus says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Did you hear that? And then he actually went through that three times over. You know, if you love others who love you, what credit is that? If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? If you lend to those you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? You know, that's kind of the language of banks. You know, the language of if you give this certain amount, you expect this much back, you know, in credit. Right? But you know that word credit? If you were to go to the common Greek, the Koine Greek behind that, do you know what that word is? That word is charis. Now, are there any Greek scholars in our midst who know what charis, C-H-A-R-I-S, means? It actually means a lot of things. We've heard this in the word charismatic, charisma. Anybody? Anybody know? It is the same root from which we get the words joy, grace, thanks or thanksgiving. Actually, you could substitute the word grace in there. What grace is that to you? What grace is that? That shifts it from a banking image to one that talks about our life in God, in Christ. It's a matter of grace. And that's how all of this stuff should move in our lives. It's by grace, God, the graciousness of God, the grace of God, that we are able to do these things. And to be honest, as what we've said in it, we don't arrive at the point of being able to do what Jesus says like that. It's a progression. It's a step by step. We grow into it. It's not that this is our ticket, and if we get to the point of being able to turn the other cheek when somebody abuses us, then God will love us. No way. God loves us no matter what. But grace moves us to alternatives, to another way of living. And that other way is not one that says, okay, if you can't do that, then we will have nothing to do with you. No. It's a realization that these are hard. This is incredibly difficult to figure your way through. What to do when persons treat you badly? What to do when somebody asks you for help? What to do about doing good when others are not intending to do you good? It's difficult, but thank God. Grace, thank God. Thankfully, there are different possibilities. Jesus, with these words, was just opening the door wide. You know, just like we've got three doors when you leave this place, we mentioned those during the children's story. There are different ways that you can leave this church. There are different ways in which you can return to your workaday world. But there are always options. And God will lead you in any of them if you are ready and willing.